Saint Teresa of Avila is known to have been gifted with a sweetness of temperament, a lively wit and imagination, a tender and affectionate heart. You're invited now to join Father Thomas Dubay for his journey into the life of this Doctor of the Church on Teresa of Avila, Personality and Prayer. And now, here's our host, Father Thomas Dubay.
Thank you for your invitation extended to us at EWTN into your home. I am Father Thomas Dubay, Marist Priest, and I should like to begin with a recollection of mine. Over the years, I have spoken to many different audiences, both lay and religious and priestly, about the contemplative dimension of human life, the call to a deep prayer life in particular. And I would say that among the most popular ideas, popular in the sense of bring great joy to people, is the idea that I am called to a deep immersion in God in a contemplative prayer life. Remember during the series someplace, I spoke in passing of a prisoner in a federal prison, and I was asked to speak to their group of prisoners about contemplation, and I chose the subject we begin with today. Namely, the call, the universal call to a deep prayer life. We're calling it growing deeply. We'll talk about the universal call first and then some comments on growing deeply. And remember the prisoner I referred to, radiant with joy during that lecture. And I'm pretty sure that was the reason. That's what I was talking about. And that's what we begin with. We call it the universal call to contemplative prayer and its summit. And I'm going to deal here with three examples from St. Teresa of Avila. She taught this over and over again in a non-technical manner. She didn't have a chapter in one of her books called The Universal Invitation to Deep Prayer. She didn't write that way. She wrote in all kinds of, but at least I would say 25 or 30 times, she clearly makes the point that everyone in every vocation is called to what we have been talking about in the whole course. Now, those of you who know Teresa quite well, and some of you in the audience I'm sure do, will have pop into your mind at this point, now just a minute, don't overstate the thing you're saying to me probably, because in the way of perfection, one of Teresa's works, in chapter 17, she seems to deny the universal call. And how about that, you say to me? Well, if this were a course, a kind of theological course, I'd spend some time on it. We'd analyze chapter 17, but we would go on to chapters 18, 19, and 20. And we would find out that she does not change her opinion about the universal call. Two things I'd like to point out, and very rapidly. Again, we could spend quite a bit of time on this difficulty, apparent difficulty. It's not a real one, actually. And I'm not going to spend that time because we don't have it. I want to deal with what she says everywhere practically in her works. And the first point I should like to make is that you will notice, if you want to go into it, that in chapter 17 she's talking about an abnormal situation, which of course would be such that there might be exceptions to attaining and growing to the universal summit addressed to everyone. But in chapter 17, she's talking about certain persons. Just if I were to say, well, acorns normally grow and are called to be oak trees, to grow to a fullness. I'm not thinking at the moment when I say that there might be a defective acorn or something abnormal or lack of water or lack of sun or improper soil. Of course, that's going to impede the growth. And Teresa's dealing with that sort of thing in chapter 17 about the call to prayer. Now, the second point I'd like to make is if you want to go into this, read also chapters 18, 19, and 20. And you will find Teresa adverts to what she said in chapter 17, but she can't stand the idea that it might be interpreted to mean that not everybody's called to this deep prayer union with God. And so she vigorously repeats, everybody, he doesn't have favorites and that he gives it only to certain people and all that. So read the whole thing and you'll find out there's no problem there actually at all. Now, that being said, I want to give you of the 25 or 30 texts in St. Teresa that make the point that everyone is called to this deep immersion we've been talking about through the course, especially the last half of this series. I want to give you three samples, and they're very easy to see, each of them. And the first one occurs in her autobiography, chapter 27, number 12. I quote Teresa with some comment. "Reflect," she says, "that is, it is indeed certain that God gives himself in this manner," and in the context, manner means the lofty favors. Remember, that was one of her terms for very advanced prayer, you see. "God gives himself in this way to those who give up all for him. He shows no partiality. He loves everyone. Nobody has any excuse, no matter how miserable he may be." Now, it'd be very hard to say that more strongly and emphatically. Let's notice what we've got in this sentence. Well, actually, it's two sentences. "It is indeed certain that God gives himself in lofty prayer." It's not probable. It's not maybe he might want to give it to you. It's certain that he does. But by the way, notice, as I've said elsewhere, he won't force this on anybody. If I want my petty little selfishnesses, I won't have deep prayer, because I've told God I don't want deep prayer. I want my petty selfishnesses. So if I live the gospel fully, it's certain he wants this deep prayer for me and for you too, whether you're married or single or religious or priest or bishop or whoever you are. That's the first thing to notice. It's not probable only. Secondly, no, by the way, observe, "to those who give up all for him." Now, by giving up all, she means all selfishness, all egocentrism, all that sort of thing. Second thing to notice, "he shows no partiality." Well, it couldn't be more plain. I needn't comment on it. I really don't know what to say, except it just says it plainly. Thirdly, "he loves everyone." See, Teresa has the same idea about God that John in the New Testament has, and that all the saints have it, but St. John of the Cross makes the point. God is love, and Teresa is so convinced that he's purest, infinite love, of course he's going to give the fullness to everybody. I would just add there, I can't imagine God being anything other than one who wants to give each of us the fullness, because he is purest love. And Teresa remarks that. Notice how this woman has a talent of being right on target. The fourth thing to notice, "nobody has any excuse, no matter how miserable he may be." Well, plain as day. That reminds me, by the way, of one of my all-time heroes, St. Bernard. I don't think I've mentioned him once in the whole series, but he is really one of my heroes. And St. Bernard, who was another mystic meaning transforming union, all the way, infused prayer. St. Bernard was a most eloquent guy. He was just I shouldn't call a saint a guy, perhaps. But anyhow, you get the point. And a marvelous speaker and writer. Beautiful. He wrote in Latin. Of course, that was the language of scholarship in his day. Just gorgeous Latin. Anyhow, Bernard was talking in one of his homilies about the very summit of prayer, what we just finished talking about last week. And then he adverts to the fact that everybody's called to it. Bernard said the same kind of thing Teresa did. And John too, by the way. And then Bernard adverts to the fact that, oh, there'll be some people listening to me who think, oh no, you couldn't be talking to me because I'm a sinner. If you only knew my past life, you wouldn't be saying everybody. And Bernard adverts to that person. And the way Bernard puts it is blunt. Bernard says, and I don't have him exactly verbatim here, but the substance is perfectly accurate. Bernard says, answering this person who says, you couldn't be talking to me, Bernard says, I don't care in how deep a slime of sin you've been in. I am talking to you. No, you can't say it more strongly than that. Now, the second text from St. Teresa that I want to share with you to show you what her mind was, and it didn't change, occurs in the interior castle, which is the most mature of her works. And it's in Mansions 3, Chapter 1. And in this context, by the way, Mansions 3 does not deal with infused prayer. You might wonder, well, why am I citing that then? Well, listen to what she says. She's talking about the summit, even though she's only in Mansion 3. She's speaking here in the context about devout and virtuous lay people. And she knew lay people extremely well. You know, every religious and priest has been a layman or a lay woman, but she also had lots to do with them. And she was spiritual director for her married brother Lorenzo. Let's not forget that. So she knew lay people extremely well. In any event, she's talking about the good ones, the really holy married men and women who are really living the gospel in their state and life and all that. And she talks about their virtues. Then she adds, in that context, there seems no reason why they should be denied entrance into the very last of the mansions. Now, the last of the mansions are the transforming union. That's exactly what she's referring to. There's no reason why they should be denied entrance into the very last of the mansions, these married people, nor will the Lord deny them this if they desire it. For their disposition is such that He will grant them any favor. Any favor. By the way, notice here that when Teresa says, if they desire it, she doesn't mean a velleity, that kind of flimsy wishing something were so. She means a determined will that it be so. And with that determination, we also spoke about at length. And so, if you've got married men and women, says Teresa, who are living the gospel fully and are determined to give God everything in their vocation, there's no reason at all that they shouldn't get into the transforming union, because they're called to it too. Clear as a bell, you notice. And that brings us then to our third text making this point. And remember, as I said a little earlier, there are 25 or 30 like this. Her mind is very clear indeed. This one occurs also in the interior castle. It is Mansion 7, which is the transforming union, and Chapter 3 of it. And in this context, she's referring to the kiss in the Song of Songs, and the kiss is understood by scripture commentators as a pinnacle of communion with God. And she's commenting on the kiss. And here is what she says. I understand it, the kiss from God, to be in this mansion, seventh mansion, transforming union, I understand it to be in this mansion that petition of the bride, God's people, for the kiss, in this mansion it is fulfilled. My God, since thou seest how needful it is for us, do thou inspire Christians to desire to seek it. In other words, she wants everybody baptized to want the kiss of the transforming union, in other words, to achieve it. Observe, she does not say, O Lord, inspire Christians. Pardon me, she does say that. Notice she does not say, O Lord, inspire nuns and monks to this. She says Christians, meaning absolutely everybody, to desire it, want it, and be determined to live accordingly. We'll take our break now on that, also a very happy thought.
Teach us, good Lord, to serve you as you deserve, to give and not to count the costs, to fight and not to heed the wounds, to toil and not to seek for rest, to labor and not ask for any reward, save that of knowing that we do your will.
Welcome back once again. We're going to take up in this part of our program today some of the nitty-gritty of growing in prayer. You'll notice that our program today is on growing deeply in prayer. We've considered the fact that we're all called to the deep growth. And now I want to talk about why and how did St. Teresa reach the very summit of prayer, which, of course, is all instructive for you and me. Because if we imitate this woman, we'll be living the gospel fully, of course, and we will have a deep prayer life. Now, first I want to say what the explanations of her growth are not and were not. Many would suppose that she grew because, to some extent they would suppose, and some would quite entirely suppose it, that she grew because she had real good approaches and techniques, methods of prayer. That is not the explanation. I'm not opposed to method or technique for the beginner, especially I teach beginners discursive meditative methods, but that's not the basic reason at all. And if you know Teresa, you know it's not the basic reason. Secondly, they would suppose, well, she grew so beautifully because of her natural gifts and inclinations. And she was, as we dealt in the first half of this whole series, she was a remarkably gifted woman. But that's not the reason, basically, that she grew so beautifully in prayer. Or thirdly, people will suppose that, well, she had very lovely personality traits. And so, since she dealt so well with other human beings, well, she would deal very well with God. Well, that's all an asset, of course, and marvelous and true. But that's not the basic reason why she grew in prayer. Good as all that is. And fourthly, people would suppose that, well, she grew in prayer because, you know, she also had some real super-duper visions, you know, the real thing. We talked about that. That's not the reason, at least not the main reason by a long shot, that she grew in a deep prayer life, authentic as her experiences of God were. Now, what I want to do next, after ruling out for the sake of clarity what the explanation is not, and also these are not the explanations, the main ones, why you and I will grow in prayer, good as those things are, I want to next focus, and this is very informal, and as you can see with my little piece of paper, I didn't get any great deal of research going on this one. I usually just use my memory. I want to share with you, and it's a kind of homely thing, not in the sense of ugly, I don't mean that at all, but like an old shoe, you know. It's, and Teresa was, if I may say with all due respect and love, she was something an old shoe. I mean, old shoe in the sense of it feels good on your foot, you know, and it fits your foot, and, you know, it just seems to be the thing to do. I want to share with you some little snatches. They're all little bitty snatches. I have seven of them here. This little sticker sticks on my finger. It's very convenient. And anyhow, I want to answer the question, because we really should answer that it this way someplace in the whole series. How did St. Teresa pray? And here are some real fast little items, and then I have to get to the main conditions why she grew. The first one I jotted down, she favored focusing on the indwelling in her prayer life. So that she wasn't looking for God out on a planet someplace or on a far star. She would focus on God dwelling within, which is so clear in Scripture. Secondly, she told her nuns, and also therefore you and me, she said, when you begin prayer, look at Him, meaning the Lord. The Lord in His incarnate nature, human nature and divine nature together in His incarnated state. And she said, you don't have to meditate on Him, but just look at Him, meaning in her mind, to get started that way. She didn't mean that the nuns had to discursively go over all kinds of ideas, but she meant very much a theological thing. No one comes to the Father except by Me. Notice the remarkable talent this woman has for accuracy in theology. Very plain way of putting it. But you don't go to the Father in Trinitarian life except through the incarnate Son. And that's why she says, look at Him. Beautifully put. Profound idea. Her simple method was to recall the Lord in one of His mysteries, and she favored the Passion. Even though she wouldn't be ending up by meditating in detail on it, that's for beginners, but to get going, He's the way to the Father. The third little item, she told her nuns to bring a book. Even if they're in pretty advanced prayer, bring a book. Not that they have to use it. When you are in infused contemplation, exploring the castle sort of thing we talked about a few programs ago, you don't need a book for the most part, but she said bring one. The reason being, you might need it, and you'll have it. Namely, if you hit a blank period where nothing's happening in your prayer life, then read something to kind of gather yourself together, even if you're not going to be meditating on it. Fourthly, she never got upset about distractions, and neither should you and me. And we should learn that from her. We don't favor them, we don't keep them deliberately, but we don't get upset with them. Because when they're not willed, they're really not impeding prayer very much, if at all. And so, do your peaceful best to be, come back when you notice you're distracted, but don't get uptight about them. Very important, as he told the nuns, your will is with His Majesty. And that's got to be good. Sound advice. Fifth little item here, Teresa was optimistic even when she had times of blankness at prayer. And by blankness, I mean not simply a passing distraction. I mean for an hour or maybe a week or two where just nothing would come. She makes the point about that kind of time. I laugh at myself. I see what I can do, namely nothing. Notice she's so optimistic, she doesn't get uptight about it. She realizes that when she does have these deep immersions or ecstatic prayer and then the transforming union, she knows it's utterly a gift of God. And so the blank times tell her, look, Teresa, this is what you can do by yourself, which is zero. And she was optimistic. A very good lesson for you and me to entertain in our own prayer life, because we will hit blank spots. Sixthly, Teresa was always completely docile to the divine initiatives at prayer. There's a little rule of thumb. I haven't mentioned it so far, and I'm glad it just popped into my mind. Namely, that as we grow in prayer, especially as we grow beyond discursive meditation into the infused prayer, which we've been talking about in the last programs at great length, even though much more could be said, when you reach this infused prayer, then the rule of thumb is that God takes the initiative. When He gives whatever type of prayer we've been talking about, then you rest with that. You don't act at that point. And the other aspect of the little rule of thumb is that when God is not giving some type of awareness of Himself, such as we've been describing, then you get busy and do something active. You read something, get a little input, start a little bit of maybe thinking about it. And as soon as you notice He's beginning to give you some type of prayer, such as we've described, then you put aside your human activity. That's the rule of thumb. God takes the initiative. And Teresa always followed that in her own prayer life. And then the last little item I'll return to in a few minutes, but I'll mention it right here too. Namely, fidelity to the nitty-gritty of everyday life. All through our lives, whatever our state in life happens to be, we must be faithful to what it requires, or we're not going to be growing in prayer, because prayer is not divorced from the rest of life. Now, that being said, let me mention just briefly four basic reasons why Teresa grew in a deep prayer life. We took four explanations that are not adequate. Now we have four that are adequate. She grew, first of all, because she was this determined woman we spoke about. It was one whole section of the course. You can see it on the outline. And because she had that firm will of giving God everything, not just a floppy like a wet noodle, a firm will of giving God everything and all the nitty-gritty of daily life, that's why she grew in prayer deeply. The second basic reason is that she loved truth and sound theology and the church. She did not approach divine revelation in a selective manner, or it's been called sometimes cafeteria approach to revelation. You know, in a cafeteria, you go and you pick this thing and you leave that aside, and you pick this and you leave that aside. There are people who do that with revelation. Well, they sure do. They take what they like and leave aside the rest. They'll never have a deep prayer life. It's inauthentic. If God has revealed the whole thing, then you accept everything, or you're making of Him a liar, or unreliable, at least. Teresa bought the whole package, and she lived it. And that's another reason why she grew in a deep prayer life. She was an authentic woman from head to toe. The third reason that St. Teresa grew in a deep prayer life is that she had this burning love for God and for other people. She hated mediocrity and corner cutting, and she was not that type of individual. I'm just kind of sighing to myself, because there's so many examples of this that could be adduced that I think I won't even start to adduce them, because we wouldn't have time to really get going with it. But read her life, read her letters, read her way of perfection, her book of foundations too. I've not mentioned that book at all in our course, and I should really. Read her interior castle, of course, and you will find that Teresa was a woman exactly polar opposite to mediocrity in corner cutting. And that has an awful lot to do with her growth in prayer. As a matter of fact, if she were that type, she would never have grown as she did. And fourthly, she gave prayer the place of primacy in her life. Here I want to cite to you Luke 5:16. It's Jesus. And there's no better way to finish any kind of lecture series than with Him. He's everything. He's one with the Father and the Holy Spirit, and He's the pinnacle of human nature. He's everything. And He's our Redeemer. And I want to close with Him. And in Luke 5:16, we got a summary text about His prayer life. And Teresa was simply being faithful to the Lord from beginning to end, as she grew in a real prayer life. You remember how we would go off, I think I cited one of the texts, early in the morning, long before dawn, 2-3 hours, and spend prayer, time in prayer and solitude. Well, here's a summary text that summarizes all the times he did that sort of thing. That's what I want to cite to you. Namely, Luke 5:16. He would always go off to some place where he could be alone and pray. The Lord is model for everybody in every vocation. He was not in a monastery, notice. Always is here translated, the Hebrew word means, the Greek word means habitually. He would go off to a prayerful solitude and he would be absorbed in prayer. There is the model of everything we've been saying in the whole series. God bless you, and may you and I follow His example.
This has been St. Teresa of Avila, Personality and Prayer, with Father Thomas Dubay from the St. Louis Rectory in St. Paul, Minnesota.